Moncrief on News Talk.
With the Dacia range. Drive away today with no payments for the first 3 months.
You're very welcome back. Tomlin standing in for Sean today, 53106 for your text, or you can email afternoonnewstalk.com. It is that time now to learn of goings on around the world that haven't quite reached our front pages. Our guide today, not chatting to Burke Butler, who I believe is relaxing in a beach somewhere. It's actually News Talk's Shane Hannah. Shane, how are you today?
Afternoon, Tom. I'm relaxing in an attic in County Monaghan, so not quite the same.
Well, people all over the country are relaxing in attics at the moment, so join the club. One of the stories you're telling us about today are these highest ever temperatures recorded in Death Valley, the well-named Death Valley, USA. Tell me more.
Yeah, very well named. I actually experienced the temperature of 105 degrees Fahrenheit a few years ago in South Carolina. I felt like I was going to melt into the tarmac, but these figures put that into context, because the figures that have been recorded, Tom, in Death Valley, 130 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 54.4 degrees Celsius, quite extraordinary. Now, they're still being verified by the U.S. National Weather Service, but as you mentioned, it's Death Valley, a very good name. And in fact, the specific location of this reading was Furnace Creek.
Wow.
So quite an apt name, I think you'll agree. But before this, the highest temperature reliably recorded on Earth was around 54 degrees Celsius, so just below this. But that was also in Death Valley around 7 years ago. Scientists never really agree on things, but there have been higher readings purportedly in the past that they cannot agree on. So there was one of 56.6 degrees about a century ago in Death Valley. That is disputed. And one in 1931 of 55 degrees in Tunisia. So that has serious credibility issues, according to scientists.
Okay.
So it's not the first time, but serious temperatures.
I was we were actually talking about this at home last night, and we have one of those maps of the world, and we were looking at it, and it's 30 to 40 degrees latitude above the equator. So you would be wondering, why isn't it places on the equator that are going to get hit with these temperatures?
I know, you'd expect it. It's just that dead desert heat, I guess, in Death Valley. But America are getting it quite hard at the moment as well. They have this heat wave on the west coast at the moment. Temperatures expected to rise further this week. So they're having a real hard time of it. I mean, you're hearing reports of firenadoes as well, which is pretty much as scary as it sounds. So since Friday, there's a fire that has burned more than 20,000 acres north of Lake Tahoe. So it's quite extraordinary. And the west coast particularly getting it very badly. You have wildfires in California, Colorado, Oregon, and causing a serious amount of damage. And look, the impact is extreme as well. So tough times for the West Coast.
Also, I was reading they're having electricity blackouts because they actually rely on solar and wind energy, and that's not as reliable in these kind of situations.
Exactly. It strains power grids, causes blackouts, and, you know, in extreme examples, this can ground planes, it can melt roads. We all know it can cause the inside of cars to overheat as well. So, and then farmers, it's a severe impact on agriculture. You know, your vegetables wilting and dying, you're encouraging the spread of diseases as well in plants. So it's quite scary. And even the CDCC in America is saying, you know, it's heat waves have killed more people on average than any other extreme weather event in the USA. So quite
amazing.
Scary and something they're too used to.
I think the hottest I've ever had is about 105 as well. And again, where else but in America? We heard a lot about Israel and the UAE. It's a very historic deal, really concrete step between those two countries.
Massive. So this is an agreement that was reached last week to establish diplomatic ties between Israel and the UAE, two countries who haven't had the best of relationships, it's fair to say, in recent past. But the UAE foreign minister called his Israeli counterpart. This is being hailed as a massive step for relations in the region. But it's not only this famous telephone call that happened, but websites have been opened up as well. So on Sunday, the Israeli news websites had previously been blocked by United Arab Emirates authorities, like the Times of Israel, like the Jerusalem Post, Ynet. They could be accessed without using means to bypass internet filtering in the Emirates. So this is a huge step as well. And people, you know, have tried to get ways around calling each other from the two countries in the past, but now they can do it directly. And this is something that is seen as a bit of a boost for Donald Trump as well in an election year, because it was the US that kind of brokered this deal last Thursday. And clearly, not everyone is happy about it, Tom. There has been some kickback as well. You've got Palestine saying it puts a just resolution of the Middle East conflict even farther out of reach, undermines the Arab consensus. And then in Pakistan, you have people setting ablaze American and Israeli flags, burning effigies of Donald Trump. They're denouncing this Emirati-Israeli deal. So not everyone is delighted with this.
A lot of this is down to a lot of the countries out there see their arch enemy more as Iran, really, isn't it? They've that in common.
Exactly.
In Thailand, the king commuted the death sentence of two men convicted of killing British tourists.
So this was a high-profile case from 2014, caused massive controversy at the time, especially in Thailand. But two men denied killing David Miller. He was a 24-year-old from Jersey, and Hannah Witheridge, a 23-year-old from Norfolk. Their bodies of their two British tourists found on a beach, the popular tourist island of Koh Tao in the Gulf of Thailand. So some Irish listeners might have been there on their holidays in Thailand before. But there were allegations as well that police mishandled evidence in this case, beat the suspects into making confessions. So an extraordinary case that really gripped the country. But as you mentioned, the king in Thailand reduces thousands of prison sentences, sometimes on his birthday. But his 68th birthday was on the 20th of July. And it's only come out in the last couple of days that the two of those who had their sentences commuted from death to life in prison were these two men. So it's extraordinary. And look, the death penalty does exist in Thailand. It is rarely carried out. I think since 1935, they've executed just over 326 people, but not that many in comparison to some other countries in Asia. And look, as of March 2 years ago, 510 people on death row, but they rarely carry out these executions. So it's a big deal.
Okay, Human Rights Watch said the guilty verdict was profoundly disturbing. So it sounds like it was shaky to begin with. So meanwhile, the US, Donald Trump, taking great pride in the fact that he feels he's bringing China to heel, but huge naval drills, which will cause further friction between the two countries to take place.
Yeah, absolutely. So these are naval drills that took place in Hawaii. Now, they are more pared down because of COVID this year, but it's quite extraordinary. It's RIMPAC is the name of this event, the Rim of the Pacific exercise. So it takes place, it's hosted by America in Hawaii. It offers sailors an opportunity to hone their skills, essentially, with friendly navies from around the world. So it is the chance for Americans to kind of show their arm a bit and show what they're worth. But it sounds to me, Tom, a bit like a Debs for naval destroyers, because these guys just meet up, they go for parties. Ordinarily, pre-COVID, they would have gone for parties in Honolulu. They would have kind of gone onto each other's ships and drank and danced and kind of, it's seen as a camaraderie builder, a bit of a team bonding between different navies across the world. But as you can imagine, not everyone is happy about it. China, of course, the tensions between US and China that you mentioned. I mean, back in June, the US Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, he met with one of China's top diplomats in Hawaii to discuss a range of issues. But then in July, Pompeo announcing that the US rejected almost all of Beijing's territorial claims in the South China Sea, which clearly did not please them. But yet this event, RIMPAC, is going ahead. And there have been rallies in Hawaii because people don't want this. A lot of people in the local area don't want this because of COVID and the impact that it might have. The US obviously saying they're going to take every single precaution they possibly can. But you only need to look back at the incident with the USS Theodore Roosevelt at the start of the year when over 1,000 members of the crew became infected and one died. So it remains to be seen how this will play out.
Right, but China more active in that area at the moment, isn't it? Right, then on to Queensland, the first Australian state to ban gay conversion therapy.
Yeah, so this is quite a strange one. But gay conversion therapy, clearly played down by a lot of countries as outside mainstream medicine, and rightly so. But some practitioners sadly do continue to conduct this gay conversion therapy. So we even had this in Ireland a couple of years ago. I think it was the Senator Fintan Warfield who introduced a bill to the Senate to ban this conversion therapy on LGBT people and really brought it to the fore in Ireland. But as you mentioned, in Australia, they finally started a conversation around this. So state politicians in Queensland voted to make the practice illegal on Thursday. So this means that any health professional who engage in this practice faces up to a year and a half in prison, depending on the age of their subject. So it's a conversation that's been coming up in a number of other countries as well. You've got the likes of Germany and Brazil who are banning these sessions either fully or partially. Israel as well taking the first steps. Towards an outright ban in July. So it's a first step for Queensland.
Hard to ban, though, isn't it? Because it can often take place in a very kind of informal setting.
Exactly.
In Africa, language is dying out left, right and centre.
This is a really sad story in many ways, but this is the Yaku language in Kenya that is spoken by less than 10 people in the world that can speak it today. So extraordinary. And they think all of those speakers are over the age of 70. So this is the Yaku are an ethnic group of about 4,000 people. Most of them, though, now speak other languages. In fact, some of the kids who go to school, this is in the hills of central Kenya near the town of Doldol, but most of the kids actually speak English in school. Now, this is a group of tribal people, used to be hunter-gatherers, but then the Maasai people moved into the area around 100 years ago. the Yaku then decided they had to learn to communicate, learn to trade. And so the language essentially died out. But there is, as you mentioned, a small group of people that still speak it. But UNESCO are essentially saying a lot of these languages are dying out, and it's virtually extinct as things stand. So as much as 10% of over 2,000 languages spoken in Africa may disappear within the next 100 years, they think. So it's a very sad story.
My word. Finally, the big story of this tanker off Mauritius.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone has seen the photographs of this, it would annoy you to say the least, because the photographs of Mauritius you're used to seeing are that lovely blue turquoise ocean, and it's not the image that we're seeing at the moment. So this is a disaster that began on July 25th. A Japanese carrier on its way to Brazil ran aground off the coast of the Indian island Mauritius, and it's had a massive impact. Tons and tons of oil being leaking into the sea. That tanker split as well across the weekend, which really has exacerbated the problem, Tom, to be fair. And you know that countries like Mauritius, I think they only have a population of just under 1.3 million people, maybe, clearly rely heavily on tourism, on fishing. So this is going to have a massive impact on a country that's already struggling to deal with the coronavirus pandemic.
Well, what was in there in the first place? Shane, thank you very much for that, as always. You can listen back to the podcast around the world on the newstalk.com website, or on the app, the Newstalk app. After the news, go in search of the rarest owl in the world. First quick break.
Moncrief on Newstalk.
With the Dacia Duster. Shockingly affordable. And now with 3 months deferred payments too.